Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome to another episode of Another Texans Podcast. I'm your co-host, John Crumpler. I'm the lead analyst over here at Texans Wire at USA Today. Make sure you guys are following along on the Texans Wire. And our other co-host, Storm, how you doing tonight, man?
I'm good, brother. I'm good. I'm excited for this one. This is going to be fun.
Tell the people what we've got in store tonight.
We've finally, and this is something I've been working on for a while. Me and him have talked about it for probably the better part of 2 years now. And Brian Cushing is going to be joining us here shortly. And we're going to talk about football, life after football, and just everything, you know, in general. So it's going to be fun, man. I'm excited for it. He should be getting on here pretty soon. I know he's at baseball practice for his kids right now, so.
Yeah, going to be a great discussion with Brian Cushing that we're looking forward to. But we'll start, and we'll either end up finishing this discussion before he jumps on or afterwards. Pat and I have not had the opportunity yet to talk about the Miami preseason game. Obviously, the Texans fell on Saturday 28-3 to the Dolphins. I was unfortunately not able to really cover the game. I was at my sister's wedding. But now some time here to break it down, and I know we've all had a lot of time to digest it. Storm, just to kick things off with football – What is your biggest offensive takeaway from the Miami Dolphins game?
I mean, as far as the first team, things looked a lot better this week. I felt like CJ was more decisive in his throws. He was faster with his reads. He felt pressure well in the pocket. His throws were very accurate. I mean, you know, just the same thing that everybody's been saying all freaking week. And then flip it over to the defensive side of things. Defensive line was getting into the backfield quite a bit. I mean, we obviously saw Will Anderson Jr. get the sack, the forced fumble sack. And then we saw Sheldon Rankins get in the backfield. He hit Tua one time. So it was good to see all around from the first team a good performance. Obviously, we would have liked to see them score on that opening drive when Perryman had the interception. But, you know, it's preseason. They went for it on fourth down. They tried something out. It didn't work. It is what it is. They're going to move on from it. So, all in all, I think it was good, man. It was really good to see some of the things that they did for sure.
Yeah, and I mean the score of these games don't matter. It's a lot of vanilla calls on both sides of the ball. It's a lot of guys who are not going to see action for the team. So I think the focus does really have to be on that first quarter. And Storm, I would agree with you. I think it does start with CJ Stroud. He kind of flashed the tools that. You know, I saw some people say this week they weren't impressed with him, and I'm asking, what are you looking for? They're not asking him to challenge the ball vertically. He's just doing exactly what they're asking him to do with the play is given, and he's making them look really good. I mean, good mobility to get outside the pocket, that accuracy that we talked about the entire draft process really on display on those rollouts and in the pocket. I thought that third down conversion to Robert Woods – I mean, definitely looked better than anything from the first preseason game where he threw the ball exactly when it had to come out, if it was going to get to the sideline before the safety got there. And where he put the ball, he made sure even if the safety was there, there wasn't going to be room to interrupt it. And just generally offensively, I wrote about this week. Pat, I'm pretty excited about some of the, like, overarching themes of this offense that are beginning to present itself. So, per NFL Next Gen right now, the Texans are third right now in preseason usage of 12 personnel. Right now they're fifth in 13 personnel usage. I might have swapped those up. But regardless, we're seeing a lot of heavy tight end use, and that's something I think is going to continue into the season, using Andrew Beck and Tegan Quartariano to – oh.
We're going
to – are we bringing him in?
Got to interrupt you, man.
Oh, that's perfect. You could have given me the signal.
Sorry. What's up, Brian?
How's it going, guys?
Hey, Brian. Thanks for coming on, man.
Of course. Thanks for having me on.
So you skip baseball practice tonight?
No, I'm here.
Y'all are at the garage then?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Nice. Very cool, man. So you guys gearing up for the fall? Y'all doing tournaments in the fall, or are you going to be doing doubleheader?
Yeah, just doubleheader. And I think we'll probably do one or two NITs and just kind of focus on football. So
nice.
Kids need a break.
Maybe. Very cool. Very cool. Well, John, I know you've got some questions lined up. I've got some as well. Go ahead and kick it off, man.
Yeah, absolutely. You can, And Brian, I don't think we've gotten to speak before, but my name is John Crumpler. I write about the Texans. Thank you so much for coming on the show, man. I guess the first place I just want to kick it off is, what are you up to these days? What is life after football look like for you?
Yeah, busy as ever. Definitely thought I'd have more free time. But, you know, I think just now being involved with my kids' sports and them playing baseball year-round, football, and this, some other supplemental stuff on top of it, it's I'm busy. You know, I'm staying around sports. I'm staying engaged and, you know, trying to help all their teammates and kids they play with as well, and just helping them develop, teaching about sports, teaching about life and everything else that comes with it.
It sounds like you're staying pretty plugged in with sports and that way with your kids. What is your relationship like with football now? Like, how has that changed since retirement? Do you still watch a lot, or is it really you keep that with your family?
Yeah, you know, I don't watch that much. I'll watch some big games on Sunday, probably Sunday night. If it's a good matchup, I'll check out Monday night. And then obviously always try to, you know, see what the Texans are doing as well. And I'm excited about, you know, where they're at right now and going forward. So probably have watched more football before in my day, and especially while I was playing, it was, you know, I was enjoying it as a spectator, but at the same time, I was scouting half the time too. So, you know, there's none of that anymore. I guess it's a lot more leisurely now and casual, so I can kind of just enjoy it more now and not look at it so much as a job.
That's great.
Very cool. So are the boys are pretty into professional football or college ball themselves?
Yeah. They definitely enjoy it, you know, and anytime we have a chance to go over to NRG, they love it. And just to see that game day atmosphere in the NFL. College, they love watching USC. They love watching big matchup games. They've definitely grown into it a lot more. You know, my oldest is 10, second one's 9. So they're understanding a lot more. You know, you hear them talking about players in the NFL, big name guys, and it's crazy how quickly things change, you know, and how the big name guys now are people 2-3 years ago, you had no idea who they were. And sometimes little name guys that I'm not even sure who they are. Right. Mm. But it's just that era we're in, you know, and everything's very accessible with social media, the internet, and all that. So if they got questions, they can look it up. They don't have to lean on me as much, which is nice. But at the same time, I have to be careful exactly what they're seeing and watching.
Of course.
Absolutely.
Brian, you brought up your kids loving to watch USC, and obviously you played college football there. I thought of this week. I don't know if you saw, but Netflix, they do a sports documentary series, and this week they came out with Swamp Kings about the 2007 Florida Gators and kind of the peak of that program. And you were really at USC at kind of the height of their powers in the last 20 years. What was playing in LA like back then when you were there? And if there was a documentary on your USC Trojans teams, who would be the star of that?
Yeah. You know, I've seen the previews, and obviously it's not quite out yet, but it's eerily similar in some of the quotes and stories you hear the guys talk about, even in the, you know, the little clips that they just preview. I heard Brandon Spikes talking about, he said something like, it was like we were training for Iraq. And I always felt we were training for a war, not football. And that was kind of the mindset we had as well. I think, and anytime you get in such an ultra competitive atmosphere where there's 2, 3, 5 stars behind you, you know, ready to take your spot at any time, I think it's, you know, you're back against the wall kind of mentality. And it's a team, but everyone's fighting for themselves at the same time. And to be a starter on a team like Florida, USC in that era, was everything. To the guys in that locker room, right? You were the guy around campus. You were the guy nationally, and it was something you never wanted to give up. So the level of training and intensity that went into every little thing was, you know, life or death, and that's kind of how we looked at it. So it was just extremely competitive, extremely physical, very tough mentally, you know. And if you didn't love it, you would get exposed. So, you know, I think that was kind of the atmosphere that Pete wanted. Pete Carroll at USC was a super competitive atmosphere where guys absolutely loved the game and wanted to win. You know, that was the biggest thing, and that was the message that was preached to us every single day. We reiterated it in the locker room, and you know, I'm excited to watch it because I had one or two really good friends on that team at the time, and you know, just every offseason trading stories with them and listening to them, and then me telling my part. It was you know, even though it was on opposite ends of the country, it was really similar in a lot of ways, you know, and two different philosophies. I think Urban Meyer and Pete Carroll are very different. But I think they both try to get the most out of every single player on that team. And I think they do a really good job of it, or did a really good job of it. Now, yeah, so ours, I think it depends on the year, you know, but the obvious ones, you know, the Reggie Bushes, the Matt Leinarts, guys like that, that had that those major national accolades. We're a little older than me, and then kind of the tide turned a little bit over the next couple of years, and we actually became, I feel like, more of a defensive-focused football team, right? You know, it's kind of this high-powered West Coast offense, and then next thing you know, we got, like, three first-rounders on defense, and all 11 guys were on an NFL roster the next year. So it was but, you know, that's just kind of how he recruited, right? I think Pete would always tell you he's going to recruit the best guys in California. And if you recruited outside of California, he envisioned you as a first-round draft pick. You know, there was no other reason he was going to go after you. He wanted to see those kind of guys with that level of commitment leaving their home state to come there, play, and help win a national championship.
So you, you know, you guys, you know, you talked about it being like a war. Recently, Will Anderson Jr. was interviewed, and he was asked about one of the biggest things that he learned from Nick Saban was he learned how to practice. Was that, what was the biggest thing that because you were at USC for a while too. You didn't just, you know, nowadays you got a lot of kids doing 2 years in college and then they're going pro. So you were there for quite a while. What was one of the biggest things that you learned while being at USC during your time that helped you transition into the NFL?
Yeah, no, same thing. Practice was extremely important, and it was very competitive. It was very public. You know, Pete had no rules about who can come. And in Los Angeles at the time, we didn't have an NFL team. We were the NFL team. You know, so the amount of Hollywood stars and guys coming or ex-football players that come in and watch, you never know who would show up. He'd show highlights the next day in the team meeting of guys winning, guys getting beat. And I think it was probably halfway through my freshman year, I realized that some of our practices were harder than games. Some of our practices were legit harder than our games because I'm going up and I'm going against Ryan Khalil, Sam Baker, Reggie Bush, Matt Leinart, Dwayne Jarrett, Dominique Bird, and, you know, it goes on and on. And Pete loved one defense versus one offense. And he loved showing the highlights the next day. And he never wanted to be on the wrong end of the highlight. So, you know, every day had a theme. You know, it was competition Tuesday. It was a turnover Wednesday, no repeat Thursday. And the practice matched that theme. So we had an idea going into it what not only that day would look like, but what film would look like the next day. And like I said, you didn't want to be on the wrong end of that film. So it was hostile. It was violent. It was competitive. But it made everybody in that room better. And, you know, I think you practice that hard. The level of confidence you have going into a game, knowing what you've, the work that you put in during the week, translates great. And then the game is it's time to have fun. Right, all the hard work's done. It's time to have fun. You know what you have to do. You know your competitor. You know your opponent, and it's time to roll. So that, you know, like Will said about Nick Saban, I think Pete's very similar. Practice was brutal. You know, I was talking to Ryan Khalil last year on a podcast, and we talked about, he brought up the script. Like, do you remember how crazy our scripts were? I mean, it was 2.5 hours, and it'd be like 36 periods. Of just nonstop competitive, all out tackling, hitting, you know, and I think you get to that level. I don't want to say guys are expendable, but there's a really good guy right behind him too. So, you know, if something was to happen, you're not going to skip a beat, right? Unless you lose someone like you, obviously your starting quarterback or Reggie Bush that at that time was, you know, the best player in college football. Besides that, you know, we had a lot of other pieces that could step in and you know, contribute. So practice was brutal. But like I said, it made games that much easier.
Nice. Yeah, and it's, I mean, it sounds like that was an incredible environment to prepare for the NFL level, and you got the coaching that you needed to take that next step. When you got to Houston, you got to play for some really good coaches in Houston, and one of which I wanted to ask you about, now that we've got another defensive head coach in Houston with DeMeco now, but you got to play for Wade Phillips. What made him such a great defensive coordinator? Obviously, he has just an incredible resume at this point. What was it like playing for Wade?
It was a lot of fun. You know, I was extremely excited when Wade came in, just because of who he was and who his dad was, and just knew everything about him, Houston, the teams he had coached, and his experience, and the players he had coached as well. I think the best thing that Wade did was he was very, he could adjust very well depending on his personnel, right? He had his 4 or 5 staple plays, but if he had his 2 or 3 athletes that he liked what they did, you know, he would adjust things for them. And he just lets you go play football. The playbook was not big. So, you know, we got it down pretty quickly. I felt like we played faster because of it. We knew we were able to execute, you know, but he gave guys a lot of options on the field, a lot of free reign. And, you know, this is how you're supposed to do it. But if you make the play doing it this way, I'm okay with that too, right? Where you can run into some guys and, you know, you get a sack that, you know, it turns the ball over and wins the game. In the locker room, they're telling you, that's great, but you went through the wrong gap. And Wade was never that kind of guy, right? He gave guys a lot of freedom. He had trust in a lot of his guys that he put on the field to make plays. And, you know, it gave you a lot of confidence in yourself when your number was called. And it also made you want to play for him as well. So, you know, it worked out in all ways. Still talked to Wade, loved everything he did. You know, those were some really awesome years in Houston, and a very, very fun, cool guy to play with. You know, you sit in a defensive meeting room and Wade Phillips is, you know, putting in the game plan, and you kind of, it's surreal. You know, it's surreal. The guy standing up there, and you know his history, and you know his family's football history, you know, and this guy's talking to you, and you know, you want to make him proud, you want to go out and play hard for him. So it was a great experience with Wade.
So you got to coach by Wade, and you got to play with the guy that's now running the show in Houston, and that's DeMeco.
Yeah.
What are the similarities you see between the two of those guys? I mean, I know you got to spend a lot of time with DeMeco as a player.
Yeah.
And obviously he spent some time in San Francisco now as a coach. What have you seen so far in his time as a coach now that you think is going to help him, you know, be successful in the long run?
Yeah, I think DeMeco's got great energy. I really think he relates with every single guy on the team. I don't know personally, but I would believe he has an open door policy, right? Where guys really have a question or burning desire to talk about something, he's got no problem sitting down with anybody about anything. Right. And he's got advice outside football too. Whatever DeMeco decided to do in life, he was going to be successful at it. He's that kind of guy. He's passionate, extremely hardworking, smart, motivated. And I don't know if I've ever met anyone that doesn't like DeMeco. And it's, you know, that's huge for a locker room. It's super important for guys knowing who their head coach is and being motivated to go out there and play for him. You know, and I can't imagine anybody, you know, these next couple of years that would have an issue with the way he went about things. You know, I think he's truthful. I think he's straightforward. He's honest. And if you're not getting something done, he's going to tell you. And I think if you're a true pro, you appreciate that. You listen, you absorb it, and then you try to go apply it and make some changes. So, you know, he's young. He's got a lot of energy. He's had his coaching experience, obviously, too, after playing. He's been in some big football games, both playing and coaching. So the experience is there. I know he's a first-time NFL coach, head coach, but you know, he's been through it all. And I'm more excited, is not even the word, to see him, you know, go out there and turn things around. I think if anybody could do it, it was him.
And then Brian, I'm going to ask him, Pat, actually, about, are you in Houston right now? Is that where you're living?
Yeah.
You're still here. So. Yeah. because I know you mentioned your kids will get excited to go to NRG. They fall a little bit. Have you been able to feel the energy shift around the team this summer when people talk about it? I'm sure it's hard for you to escape questions about the Texans after spending your playing career there. Have you noticed that kind of tonal shift around the team?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it was almost, you know, a two-year span where I'd go out to, you know, the baseball complex or a football game, and people almost didn't want to talk to me about it, right, because it was almost awkward, you know. But now it's gotten to a point where people are excited again. People ask questions. People want to know about, you know, what kind of guy D'Amico is and what do you think he's going to do and what kind of defense do you think he's going to run. You could feel it's very evident. It's out there, and I think, you know, it'll be interesting to see a first home game, the attendance, and if things get rolling to really see, you know, how quickly it can get back on track. Because like I said, if anyone's going to do it, it's him, you know, and he's got the excitement and the people behind him, right? And that's half the battle. So now it's just, you know, putting the product on the field and getting it done.
So you talked about the energy shift and everything like that. And there's recently been Cal and Hannah have kind of become a little more on the forefront publicly of, you know, being with the fans and stuff like that. What difference do you see from, you know, your time is with the organization now to now with how they're handling? Because obviously Bob was very public as well. And then unfortunately, when Bob passed away, there was this kind of period where, you know, ownership wasn't really public. Yeah. So now they're out there. Do you think that's a positive thing for the fans? And how do you think it's going to influence the future?
I think it's positive. I think it's great. You know, I think people should kind of get to know the owner, right, and know what he's all about and what his vision is going forward. You know, that's how you get a fan base in the city behind you. I think Cal, you know, needed 2-3 years to really kind of understand how he wanted to go about things. But I think he's comfortable, and I think he's confident now, not about only where he is, but the coaching staff and the front office he's put in that building. You know, I really feel like he thinks he's got the right people there. I think a lot of us do, you know, and I think now it's kind of he's had his couple years. He's gone through his, you know, his ups and downs and probably more downs. And that's OK, you know, and knowing where he doesn't want to go again. So, you know, I think in his eyes, it's only up from here. I think he wants to be more engaged with the fan base. He wants to have a successful football team in Houston, you know, and he was obviously his son and Bob talked about all the time how Houston deserved an NFL football team again. He said the football city. So, you know, he was the guy to get it done. And Cal was there watching it the whole time. And, you know, it's his turn now. And I only see it going up from here.
Brian, I have that. I know you said you've kind of been able to distance yourself from football in a healthy way since retiring from the league. But you still catch a few games. So I wanted to ask, obviously some defensive trends in the last few years in the league. What do you think is different about the linebacker position today in 2023 than when you entered the league?
Yeah. Size, you know, it's defensively, it's always been about matching personnel on offense. Right. And, you know, you see these tight ends now that are almost receivers. You see the running backs that are top stars, and there's an extra zebra on every team that, you know, sets a combine record. So the speed alone is very different than when I played. So you have to counter that, and you have to match that on defense. So you see a lot of guys that were, you know, at one time safeties, now linebackers. Now linebackers that are now D-linemen. Because they can run, they can hit tackle, make plays in space. And like I said, it's just all about matchups. And you know, the better matchups you have, the better chance you have. But I'd say overall, just the size and speed are the two biggest glaring physical attributes, I think, that have changed over the last 10 to 15 years as far as team defense and especially the linebacker position. Now, you got some guys out there that are just absolute freaks, right, that are still 250 that could fly. But it's much more rare now than it used to be, or 250 is even a defensive line weight, right? Where back, you know, in the early 2000s, if you were, you know, less than 250, you could be playing DB at that point, right? There were some massive safeties back then. So it's just all very different. And you got quarterbacks now that could run around and throw it from one end to the other 50 yards across body. So it's how do we stop those kind of guys? And like I said, just matching personnel with better athletes, whether they're smaller guys or not, but the speed overall is the biggest concern, I'd say.
And this does kind of beg a follow-up. Is there – so obviously that change in the size and speed of the linebackers, you're looking at faster players, a lot of defensive back heavier personnel. What linebackers are being asked to do is different. Is there anything you watch or anything you've seen when you're watching the game today that makes you say, like, I wish I'd gotten, like, my shot at that in the league? Any like, trends that you think are interesting?
I think they're interesting. I'm not sure if I would have been able to get it done. You know, I'm kind of happy when I played. I think my body and what I could do kind of fit what was the theme at the time. I see some linebackers and I say, I couldn't do that. I know that for sure. You know, but like I said, it's been a lot of these players have been tailored and they practice to be able to do those kinds of things. Maybe if I had more experience growing up and that was kind of, you know, the overall theme of where defensive football was, I would have had a better chance of doing it. I think so. But I definitely would have had to train and play differently now if I was playing today.
All right, so I got two questions for you, and then I think we can let you go and get back to practice. So first, when you played, obviously we saw some of the antics and stuff like that you had out on the field, the helmetless headbutt, stuff like that, the trash talking. But we saw you on the sidelines and you know, your commentary when you were mic'd up and stuff like that, and you're just hilarious, right? You seemed like you were pretty laid back on in the games. When you were out on the field, who was the best trash talker that you came up against in your time?
Yeah. There's a lot of good ones. My rookie year, I think it was like Kevin Mawai, Alan Faneca's last year's playing. And I was fortunate enough to play against both of those guys. And it was just like the old school offensive lineman, just gritty, nasty, somewhat dirty, you know, referee wasn't looking kind of players that I admired growing up. Right. So it was very interesting playing against those guys and then playing against, you know, some of the guys later in my career. Philip Rivers was the best trash talker for a non bad language guy. Right. It was, very interesting. You know, he would get in your ear and he didn't curse one time, no swear words, nothing. But it was like you couldn't tell if he was really talking crap or not because he was like making up words so he didn't curse. But he would talk from the first snap to the last snap the whole time, calling guys out. Bunch of running backs, you know, Marshawn was great. I knew Marshawn from college, so there was a, you know, some previous experience there. I played with Lendell in college. I played with Reggie in college. So playing against those guys in the league was fun. And, you know, there was a lot of guys at the time. There was a lot of trash talking going on. But, you know, you think about like your big name guys, like the Peyton Mannings, the Tom Brady's, you didn't want to trash talk them, right? Because if you're winning and you kind of want to let them just stay asleep and don't wake them up, piss them off, right? And you see what Tyron did to Brady in the Super Bowl, and it was like, yeah, I never wanted to be in that situation where that guy is attacking me the rest of the game. So if we're somehow beating New England in New England or Indianapolis up when Payne was playing up there, you know, just go about your business and hopefully get out of there with a win. You know, otherwise you're pissing off the wrong guy. And you know, there were certain guys you knew not to say anything to. You know, it's I heard TJ Houshmandzadeh the other day talking about when the first time he was talking crap to Troy Polamalu and just cursing him out. And Troy turned around and, you know, said, God bless you, brother. God bless you, TJ. And then he was like, right from there, I knew that guy I would never mess with. Because if a guy can play that crazy and be that calm at the same time, that's a dangerous human being. Mm-hmm. So there were certain guys you just knew, like, you know, I'm going to try to kick his ass, but at the same time, I'm going to stay in my lane and, you know, not talk too much about it. So, But it was part of the game. You get fired up. I was fired up all the time. I mean, it was just super excited to play football and be in the NFL. So, you know, whether I was, you know, talking to teammates or talking to the other team, I felt like it helped me. And, you know, if somebody went back to me, then it was competitive and it was fun.
All right, so last one. So I don't know if you knew this, but outside of the guys that are currently on the roster that were drafted in the first round, you're the only guy that the Texans have drafted in the first round that has played his entire career with the team. Did you know that?
No, not really. No. I mean, I didn't really think about it, but no, I did not know that.
Yeah, so was there ever, and I know, I you know, we never heard about it publicly, and a lot of times we hear about this stuff publicly from a lot of players. You look what's going on in Indianapolis right now with Jonathan Taylor and stuff like that. Was there ever a time during your playing here that you felt like it wasn't going to end like that, like you were going to end up somewhere else?
You know, I don't think I ever really looked too much into it, but I always knew there was a chance. You know, even when I was down in Houston, I visited a couple teams. And there were times I was frustrated, whether mm-hmm. my role or just kind of the team's overall outlook at something. But, you know, I went through a lot of stuff in Houston. And the way that ownership and the front office trusted and believed in me, you know, told me everything I needed to know. And I was all in on Houston. And, you know, the fan base alone, like, there was nothing more I wanted to do than somehow bring a Super Bowl to Houston. And I feel like the city just deserved it, still does. And I wanted to be part of that. You know, I was drafted here, you know, first round. I was obviously the first selection that year. And it gave me full confidence. And love living here, still love living here. Love being a part of the community. So, no, I was all in. And like I said, there were times, right, where you get frustrated or you have a season that doesn't turn out like you should or gets cut short. But, you know, that's just competitive football. That's NFL football. I mean, a lot of things have to go right for you to be, you know, holding the trophy up at the end of the year. We unfortunately weren't able to do it during my time here. But, you know, it's going to be an exciting day when it does happen in Houston. It's going to be a special day because like ownership and everybody else said, it's, you know, we got a lot of good sports teams, but I truly believe Houston's a football city.
Absolutely. Well, Brian, thank you so much, man, for taking time out of your evening to join us.
Of course.
Yeah. Thank you, man. I know me and you have been talking about this for the better part of probably 2 years now. So I'm glad we finally got to make it happen. I appreciate it a lot.
Thank you guys for having me.
Of course.
We'll see you.
All right, guys.
That was phenomenal.
You like that? That was fun, man.
That was great. Okay, for the audience who stuck around, hopefully not everyone left the stream as soon as he jumped off. I did not know we were doing this until I woke up this morning. Pat texted me. He's like, hey, by the way, we're going to interview Brian Cushing tonight. And I was like, oh. I was like, well, looks like I'm clearing my calendar. Like, that's what we're doing. That was fantastic. So glad we got to talk to him.
Yeah, man. I'm like I said, like I told you, you know, we've been working on, we've got another guest, and I saw somebody comment earlier. Who was it? Jerry. I've given some of the people a hint on who the other guest is going to be. And that wasn't it, Jerry. So it wasn't Brian. I don't think Brian had a rushing touchdown in college. This guy did. The other guest that we're going to have on eventually, John knows who it is. That's not a surprise for John.
That'll be an exciting one as well.
It is. Do we want to tell him? I feel like we need to tell him.
Let's save it.
Okay. We're going to hold that one because that's going to be, that's big. That's a big one too. Like Brian is great and everything, but this guy he's big. This is going to be fun too.
Oh man. Brian Cushing is a pretty huge interview that was great. I mean, that was some really thoughtful stuff about his time at USC. Like, there's just not a lot of people who can speak to, especially with how topical it is right now with the Swamp King stuff. That was interesting to hear. Because that is how people – the fact that there was no professional football team in L.A., but they just had random celebrities showing up to watch 18- to 21-year-old dudes, like, play football. I mean, I thought that was great talking to him. But I hope for those in the audience, I'm excited about the year of content that we're going to deliver on this podcast. It's looking really good. Storm, yeah. do we want to talk any – do we have anything left to say about Miami? I do think that it can be summarized as simply as C.J. Stroud and Will Anderson look awesome, and we need some more snaps. We need a full game from these guys, and we're not going to get it until week one at Baltimore.
Yeah, yeah, I think it's too little of a sample size. And unfortunately today when, you know, D'Amico talked about the Saints game, they're only going to get – you know, two series maybe. I was hoping for a full half, maybe a little bit into the third quarter for the starters, but I get it. They want to go into the regular season healthy. So that's the important thing at this point. So, absolutely. I mean, I feel like the Miami, like, you know, we can summarize it as just it's preseason and we just got to, you know, take it with a grain of salt. So
it was a step in the right direction from everyone you needed to see it from. And I agree. I was hoping for a little more too, but it's definitely the right move for Houston. Just disappointing for the content creators and people who cover the team right now. I think we'll record again after the New Orleans game, most likely, right? On Sunday?
Yeah, yeah. They play Saturday or Sunday?
I think it's Sunday at 4.
Okay. So I usually look the day before the games or on Friday just to figure out what, especially right now, but.
Sunday 8 p.m. So a bit of a late one.
So then let's shoot for Monday, maybe.
That works. That works. We will definitely be recapping the New Orleans Saints preseason game in a more prompt and timely fashion than we got to the Miami game. But I think for people who've been listening along, we made it worth it. It's not every day that Brian Cushing joins a podcast.
No, it's not. I got an idea. Tuesday is cut down day. Right?
Yeah.
So let's try to do Monday. And then if we can't, we'll figure something out and we'll definitely have to get back on recap the 53.
We owe the people a doubleheader next week regardless, because we got to preview this Baltimore game. It's finally time to start talking about what are the matchups to watch, what are the trends that we're looking for. It's football season, and it's the first Texan season with another Texans podcast.
It is, man. I'm excited for this.
All right, Storm, tell the people where they can find you if they're not already following you.
Obviously on Twitter, at PatrickStormHTX. Same thing on Instagram. you guys be sure, like and subscribe this on YouTube. It's going to help the podcast grow more than you guys know. We're closing in on 500 subscribers already, so that's big. So if you guys feel obligated, but if you guys could share this, obviously, on your social media feeds for all your friends and family, that would be huge, and we'd greatly appreciate it. So we got some big things coming. We got some more stuff in the pipeline for you guys. We're actually talking sponsorships already, John. So
let's not get ahead of ourselves.
It's in the works right now. So, and I'm actually working with a guy on getting some fancy borders and intro videos, outro videos, music and stuff like that. So we're going to make this thing really cool. So I'm excited for this.
Yeah. And I think we should be. We're excited about this project, guys. Again, you can follow me on Twitter, or as we now call it, X, at John H. Crumpler. You can find me on Instagram at Texans Doc. And make sure you're checking out one of our sponsors, the Texans Wire, texanswire.usatoday.com. New articles there every day. We've got a great host of writers this year who are excited to bring the season to you guys. And this is the audio way that we're doing it. I promise our writers are just as good. So thank you. Thank you everyone for joining in, and go Texans.